Okay, yeah, thank you for this nice introduction. So I like to talk about non-supersymmetric string constructions, particular with open strings and brains. I even thought it might be not even appropriate to talk about this here because our program has the title Supersymmetric Gauge Dynamics. But I think there will be very interesting connections also to supersymmetric theories as we will see. So this work was done in collaboration with Ralf Blumenhagen, Anna-Marie Font, and also Kostas Kunas. I think most people find it very plausible to believe that there is kind of good evidence for supersymmetry, though rather indirect. If you talk about field theory, as you know, the quest for supersymmetry is related to the solution of the hierarchy, or also sometimes called naturalist problem. And to solve this problem, one needs basically a supersymmetry scale at around 1 TeV. And of course, this theoretical prediction is the basis of designed tests at future collaborators such that, for example, the LHC. Another indirect, but rather convincing evidence might be the running of the gauge coupling constant. They nicely unify, meet at the gut scale of a 10 to 16 GeV, provided you put in all the superpartners of the standard model particles. But even also if you now switch to string theory, there's also kind of indirect evidence for supersymmetry. Namely, so far, it is essentially only possible to build a stable string vacua if the stability is ensured by space-time supersymmetry, which means that you have no tachyons, you have no dilaton tetpoles and other dangerous contributions which cause the vacuum to decay, and also, for example, the smallness or the vanishing of the cosmological constant is related to space-time supersymmetry. And moreover, if you look at sort of the standard perturbative heterotic string, which is still, I think, the most viable phenomenological approach, you get nicely the perturbative unification of the string coupling, of the gauge couplings, together also with the gravitational coupling constant. If you do computations, you see that this string unification scales around 10 to 17 GeV, so there's a little mismatch between field theory and string theory, but there are various ways to discuss and to cure this gap. On the other hand, of course, it's also a fair statement that our world is non-supersymmetric for energies smaller than 100 GeV, so we are urged to discuss also supersymmetry breaking in string theory, and there are essentially two ways of thinking. Either the supersymmetry breaking scale is small compared to the string scale. For example, you can discuss mechanisms like Gino condensation or the so-called Schirk-Schwarz mechanism. But you may also take a more radical point of view that supersymmetry is already broken at the string scale by boundary conditions. And this is precisely the issue which I like to address in my talk. Namely, I want to study non-supersymmetric string models, in particular including D-brains and open strings. So within this approach, there are also two aims which I like to discuss. Namely, the first aim is to construct indeed stable compactifications, which are in particular tachyon-free, which then can be perhaps later on used for model building. And this might be in particular natural in the so-called brain world scenario where the string scale is low. Otherwise, you might run again into the problem of naturalness or hierarchy. And here there are again two possible scenarios which you can think about. First, namely, that the bulk, which means the closed string theory, is still supersymmetric and therefore tachyon-free and therefore stable. But supersymmetry is broken by brain, anti-brain systems, which was an approach which was pioneered by Senn. This was also, I think, the point of view Ignatius was taking some 2 weeks 2 weeks ago. It has a problem that now you get a generic tachyon on the brain, anti-brain system, so a tachyon on the open string sector. But this can be also avoided if we, for example, if you put only brains and anti-brains with different dimensionality, or if you put the brains and the anti-brains on different fixed points of your orbifold. So there are indeed ways to avoid this problem. But again, I would like to take even a more radical point of view. So I want to assume that also the supersymmetry is broken in the bulk, which means that also the closed string sector is non-supersymmetric. And here, clearly, we face the problem that we have a generic tachyon in the bulk. But as I will show you, this can be indeed avoided by a particular, if you wish, new kind of orientifold projection, which simply projects out the tachyon in the closed string sector. This approach might then have the advantage that you only, to get gauge theories in the orientifold context, you need only brains and not anti-brains. So we don't face the problem of having tachyons in the open string sector. Yes? Yes? You still want to keep the closed string supersymmetry intact, right? Well, as far as I can see, not. I mean, this is the approach which people discussed, and there's also now some kind of model building in this context. So, I don't know, if you have only, I mean, what you can do, of course, you can cook up compactification, so backgrounds, which do not preserve supersymmetry, clearly. But this is not what I have in mind, right, and probably also what you don't have in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the brain anti-brain system is essentially a good example of a non-BPS system. So you might call it, you put non-BPS system into a closed string supersymmetric background, if you want to generalize it a little bit. Right? Well, mm-hmm. It's the easiest way, but of course also this, if you have, say, a P brain and a anti-P prime brain, where P is not equal to P prime, is also non-BPS, but as I said, you avoid the problem of the tachyon. This is what people do nowadays in model building. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe I'm not familiar with all the possibilities now, but I wanted only to give across a general overview over the subject. Sorry, this approach a priori, we will see at the end that there are many relations to supersymmetry, but a priori this approach has not supersymmetry at all. Maybe you don't like it, therefore, but let us discuss it anyway. So, okay, the second issue which I then also would like to address, a part of this model building aspect, to study the dynamics of non-supersymmetric gauge theories which live on these brains in this context. And this might be useful also to understand, for example, non-perturbative issues like non-perturbative dualities, symmetries, for non-supersymmetric gauge theories. So the outline of my talk will be about the following. We will discuss particular framework. We will discuss the so-called type 0 strings, which are indeed non-supersymmetric in the bulk. And as I said, first I want to discuss the way how to get rid of the closed string the closed string tachyon by special type of orientifolds. Then I will come back to the pure type 0 models and discuss non-supersymmetric gauge theories which live on the brains. And finally, I want to discuss a way, and then we come back to supersymmetry very clearly, a way how to continuously interpolate between supersymmetric type 2 strings and non-supersymmetric type 0 strings. So interpolate between supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric gauge theories in a particular way. So it's a particular way to break supersymmetry, if you wish. And I will also, if I have time, embed this in MC or in study one of these non-perturbative dynamical issues. Okay, so let's first give an introduction into type 0 strings in the D-brain content. We begin with the well-known spectrum of 2B and 2A. As you know, we have two bosonic sectors, the standard Navier-Schwarz plus, Navier-Schwarz plus. The plus sign means minus 1 to the worksheet fermion number. And we have also the two fermionic sector, which makes the system completely n equals 2 supersymmetric. As you also know, the objects which carry the charges of the Ramond-Ramond fields are the D-brain, DP brains with P odd or even, respective whether you are in 2B and 2A, and these Dirichlet P-brains, which were introduced, as anybody knows here, by Joe, are BPS states and preserve half of the 32 supercharges, which means, in other ways, there is no force between parallel D-brains, which can be most seen if you compute the annulus amplitude. The closed string exchange between, say, two D-brains, it has this familiar form, and you see, analyzing this in the closed string channel, that the exchange, the force due to the exchange of Navier-Schwarz fields and Ramond fields precisely cancel each other. So in other words, you are happy to consider stacks of N D-brains, which describe, therefore, a stable configuration. As you know, this gives rise to a UN gauge theory with 16 supercharges, say n equals 4 in 4 dimensions, which lives on the world volume of these D-brains in type 2B or type 2A. To come to type 0 strings, one does essentially a relatively trivial modification of the model that were introduced already long time ago by Seiberg and Witten. Then you can just perform a simple change in the partition function in the GSO projection. Or, and this is perhaps for us more the appropriate point of view, you can view type 0 strings as a space-time orbifold where you start with type 2 and then project by a certain Z2 symmetry, which is nothing else than minus 1 to the space-time fermion number. So this is our definition of type 0 strings. And then if you go on, and of course you have again two versions, 0B and 0A. If you now discuss the spectrum, you will get the following. Namely, first consider again, it's a closed string, the bulk spectrum. And here you see that we have only space-time bosons. In particular, we keep the Navier-Schwarz plus sector, and this Ramond-Ramond sector, which is invariant under the projection, but as twisted states, we get new bosonic sectors, namely Navier-Schwarz minus, and the second Ramond-Ramond sector, which is very important. So we see that this contains clearly the tachyonic ground state, so we get a tachyon now. As I said, we get two Ramond-Ramond sectors, so the spectrum of our antisymmetric tensor fields is essentially doubled. This means also then, of course, if we now go to the open strings and the D-brains, that the D-brains are doubled, so we have D-brains which carry the charges of these fields, and DP prime brains which carry the charges of the other fields, and it's kind of convenient to call them electric or magnetic D-brains, DP and DP prime brains. Of course, then also the spectrum of open strings is kind of richer. You have now open strings that stretch between same type of brains, say between electric brains only. And if you analyze, if you calculate the corresponding amplitudes, you see that these are space-time bosons. However, on the other hand, if you have open strings which stretch between one electric, say, and one magnetic brain, it's space-time fermion. So this is, so to say, if you wish, our former Ramond sector in the for the open strings. We again might ask ourselves, what are the forces between this type of two different type of brains. And to do it, we compute again the Arnold's diagram, and I have sketched it here a little bit. You will see that this Arnold's amplitude now gets two contributions, F3, F4, F2 are again well-known theta functions. And one contribution is proportional to the sum of the square of the two D-brain charges, and the other contribution is proportional to the difference of the square. So let's only look at the two extreme cases, namely first, where there are only, say, electric brains, so M prime is zero, then only this piece here, N prime is zero, we have to build the sum of the two terms, and then you will see that F2 drops out, which means that there's not anymore this nice relation, and that there's indeed now a force between, say, electric or magnetic brains. On the other hand, if we now study the second case, where N is equal N prime, you see immediately that this term drops, and the Arnold's amplitude has the same form as before, as in type 2. So there is no force between the so-called self-dual brains, which means that we can again now build, if you wish, stacks of N dp plus dp prime brains, which describe a stable configuration, and they behave. Also, the theory is non-supersymmetric, rather similar like a BPS object. So it is very, compelling similarity between BPS states in supersymmetric theories and these kind of brain configurations. As we will then further see, there's a UN times UN gauge theory with zero supercharges, but it is tachyon-free, which lives on this type of safe dual brain configurations. You mean, oh yes, P again is even for 0A and odd for 0B, because the degree of the tensor is precisely the same as it was before. Yes. I will mention it later. It has to do, of course, how to move the brains and what might be then your marginal directions, your marginal operators, or your moduli in the gauge theory. Right? Yeah.
If you just have N brain by itself,
yeah.
N prime,
I think the claim is, and I think I agree that they repel each other, because if you analyze F3 minus F4, you see that the Ramond expulsion is twice as much as the Nibel-Schwartz attraction. And then, hence, they repel each other. So it's a little, in a way, it's a little bit strange that having the safe dual configurations, the forces again balance out, that you get this the stable configuration. But I think it's true. Okay, so now let's start to discuss 0B orientifolds. And in this context now, and this is perhaps an important point to realize, there are two type of orientifold procedures. Namely, if you wish, the standard orientifold by omega, where omega is the Virchow parity transformation, which was used also in the context of 2B to get, say, the type 1 theory out of 2B. And this standard Virchow parity transformation, it's easy to see, keeps invariant the ground state in the Nibel-Schwartz sector. So it keeps invariant the tachyon, it survives. So the bulk tachyon is still there. Of course, you can go on now and ask for tetpole cancellation. To do it, one has to introduce, in fact, even anti-brains here. Which also gives rise to tachyons in the open string sector with this kind of gauge groups. So this whole system looks rather, I would say, unstable and ugly. On the other hand, there is here in this context also which a new orientifold called omega prime, which you just get by multiplying the old omega, the standard omega, by minus one to the, say, right-moving Virchow fermion number. This was perhaps not so well known, because in if you do it in type 2b, you will see immediately that omega prime and omega are equivalent because there are no odd states with odd worksheet fermion number there. So the omega prime and omega act precisely the same in 2b, but it does not in 0b. And the important thing is, of course, that omega prime projects now out the tachyonic ground state. So it's a useful starting point. You can do it also with, you can also do it with the left moving. This is equivalent. This is equivalent. Yeah, I mean, what do you mean by twisted vector? It's like in the standard orientifold procedure where you have to add due to the orientifoldization, as I will show you now. Other.
If you take something from this,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I will show you the spectrum. I think this is not quite what's happening here because there are state. I don't think that you get 0A to A if you do it in type 2B because we also combine with antifoldization. If you would plainly do project by minus 1 to the F right, then you switch from 2A to 2B, but not combining it with orientifold. As I said, in 2B, it's precisely the equivalent thing than the standard orientifold, so nothing changes there. Okay. So due to the orientifoldization, one has to do the usual, one has to consider the usual tadpole conditions. Namely, if you now compute the Klein bottle amplitude, which has this form, you will see that there's a Ramond-Ramond form tadpole, which has to be cancelled by introducing n self-dual D9 prime brains. And if you work out this tadpole cancellation constraint, namely if you also include the cylinder contribution and the contribution of the Möbius strip as usual, then you see that n has to be 32. So in 10 dimensions, this is of course all in 10 dimensions, if you work out the spectrum, you get now at the gauge group U32, no tachyons, plus Majorana Weyl fermions, which come, as I said, from open strings between D9 and D9 prime brains in this representation. So you see that the model is tachyon free, but, and this is of course a problem, if you go on to one loop, if you calculate the cosmological constant at one loop, or if you wish the Nibel-Schwarz tadpole at one loop, the Dillerton tadpole at one loop, you get indeed a contribution. So you have a one-loop cosmological constant, which also presumably doesn't make you feel a little bit unhappy. Just as a little remark, if we, you know, of course, that the standard type 1 theory is conjectured to be dual to the heterotic string with gauge group SO32, so you might ask also yourself whether there's also here a duality between these non-supersymmetric strings and one of the non-supersymmetric heterotic strings in 10 dimensions. And indeed, there is at least a conjecture put forward by Ralf Blumenhagen and Kumar that this should be dual to the tachyonic U16 heterotic string. And you might be a little surprised if this conjecture is true, that the dual has now a tachyon, but these authors give now a kind of plausibility argument. If you run to strong coupling, indeed there arises a tachyon, and also H group is broken by kind of bound states to the group U16, but I don't want to discuss this any further. There are other proposals of dualities in the literature. I discussed it the other day with Gabadil, and he is skeptical, for example. So they put they have a conjecture that these orientifolds are dual to certain bosonic string vacua, compactified on certain lattices. And perhaps a little bit more familiar with the Blumenhagen-Kummer approach, and the arguments they give in their paper are nice, but of course not very conclusive at the end, I think. Okay. At the next step, you can also study compactifications, like it was done by Gimon and Polchinski for the first time. And here, a little bit short now, of course the question arises, does the absence of the tachyon also hold under compactification? The answer is generically not. The tachyon can come back to you in twist detectors, but we analyze this to some systematic extent, probably not very fully systematically, and there are several exceptions. These are not all of them. So for example, in six dimensions, you do a T4 over Z2 orientifold, you get a tachyon-free spectrum with this type of gauge group and some bosonic and fermionic matter, which you can of course now check that it's free of gravitational and gauge anomalies. You can also build several four-dimensional models with matter fields, fermionic and bosonic matter fields, which might be the starting point for more fermiological investigations. Okay, but I don't want to, I think, bore you more with model building and come to the next issue, namely the construction of gauge theories from particular D3 brains in non-compact type 0 backgrounds. So we, to keep you back on track, we don't do any orientifoldization here. We now discuss the case where we have D-brains in O-A or particular 0-B flat non-compact backgrounds and want to analyze and to see what kind of non-supersymmetric gauge theories as low energy effective theories on these three brains, in particular in 0-B strings, we obtain. So the simplest case, if you wish also the most important case, was discussed in particular by Klebanov and Zeitlin, namely D3 prime brains in flat transversal compact, in flat transversal non-compact space C3. So just to recall, we have n D3 brains and n prime D3 prime brains. The black open strings are the space-time bosons, and the red ones, between unlike D brains, are the space-time fermions. You can of course also consider the case where, for example, n and n prime is different. For example, n prime is 0, then you get a purely bosonic gauge theory. But I like to continue with the case where n is equal to n prime, which, as I said, the configuration now is a stack of n self-dual D3 and D3 prime brains. The gauge theory on the four-dimensional volume is SUN times SUN, so each of the n electric and magnetic brains gives you an SUN gauge factor from the bosonic open strings. And if you do your usual analysis of if you compute your spectrum, you will see that you get in addition 6 massless scalars in each of the adjoint representation plus 4 bifundamental fermions in this representation. And this is now a very particular kind of non-supersymmetric gauge theory, namely in the following sense. First, if you compute the Wandow beta function, it comes out to be 0. This is, of course, very easy to see. But if you continue to calculate, you will also see that the two-loop beta function is 0, but not quite, only at large n, so it gets 1 over n corrections. Yeah, I guess you are right. I think it just by right dimensionality has to be 1 over n square. This is a good question. In fact, I think if I remember now right, the gauge, the calculation was done indeed for the gauge group SUN. And as you know, SUN and UN, of course, already differ by some subleading effects in 1 over N. There is a U1 contribution. Right. Right.
But in this way,
No, I think this is not what is happening. That I will discuss a little bit further. It is not what is happening. If you go to the UN, still the two loop will be non. I think still the two loop will be non-zero. No, I don't think that it's zero. But let's discuss this. No, I think it isn't. No, I think I disagree with it. I think the coefficient might be a little bit different, but since indeed the U1 contributes, I think it's non-zero. But let's go into it. Maybe I want to expose myself too much on this point. But to understand this feature, and this is, I think, the nice work which was done by Klebanov and Seiklin, they can now give very good reasoning to believe that this non-supersymmetric SUN times SUN gauge 0 has indeed a dual description as a type 0 in theory, not on a supersymmetric background, of course, but on a purely bosonic ADS5 times S5 gravity background. And they give an argument why also now in this particular background, of course not in flat space, the closed string sector is also tachyon-free, because if you compute the tachyonic potential, the mass term for the tachyon, the self-dual distributions contribute in such a way that they shift up the mass of the tachyon by non-trivial Ramond flux, but only in the case if you wish the space is enough curved. So if the Toft parameter is small enough, so if you wish, you have here a kind of window where the conjecture can only be true, but because on the one hand, for the ADS CFT correspondence, if you lead a large Toft coupling, so you have to be in the supergravity limit. On the other hand, you need here a relatively small Toft coupling in order that the tachyon is away. So there might be a chance that in some window one can do computations. And one computation you can do indeed is to compute the one loop cosmological constant in 0b. This of course changes the gravitational background. It also induces the dilaton to be not anymore constant. And then you can see that there's indeed a nice correspondence. So it's, if you wish, a 1 over n check, that this is precisely related to the breakdown of conformal invariance at the two-loop level in the gauge theory. Well, they claim to do a rather careful job, including also several numerical factors, and then they estimate it, and they get something like 100. But this is not a loop calculation. It's a classical calculation. It is a classical calculation where you compute the effective action, where you compute scattering amplitudes between various Ramond fields and the tachyon field. So this is a contribution to the tree-level effective action, which induces the shift in the mass of the tachyon. Right, but they compute something like 4-point scattering amplitudes and extract this particular term which contributes to the tachyon mass out of it. So something like 2 tachyons and 2 Ramond-Ramond states. No, I mean, if the two-loop beta function is zero, then somehow also all the string loop correction, or at least the leading string loop correction, also must be zero. And this doesn't seem to be the case. And therefore, this is what I mentioned before, that I don't think that for the UN case, the two-loop beta function is zero. But we have to look at the paper again. Are you? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you understand? You mean it's a difference between n? You say it's a difference just between n squared and n squared minus 1.
Yes.
So, if you wish. But of course, it's not only the gauge couplings are not only renormalized at two-loop by the gauge couplings themselves. You have also to include the potential, the scalar, firm, etc. So it's a bunch of non-trivial diagrams which you have to compute.
In general, then you have two-beta function because you have one factor
will have
a different beta function in general, right? Then as you are, right?
Yeah.
Are you one sensitive
Yes. But then you still have a non-zero beta function, right? Or not?
In U1.
In U1. Okay. So the zero is not conformal also, for the U1 part is not conformal then. Okay.
But it's much more complicated than that. There are also beta functions for the U power.
Absolutely.
I think the... It's not scalar, it's simply changing n to n.
It would be a kind of a miracle if this continues to be true also at the... I think we should look at the calculation after the seminar. I don't want to interrupt the discussion, of course. I'd like to add, nevertheless, a few other remarks, namely about the structure of the moduli space, at least the classical moduli space of this kind of models. Namely, as I said, the self-dual, the three-brain, the three primates are a stable system, so you can move them at least together freely in the six-dimensional transversal space. So, which means that the scalar potential has a common Coulomb branch of the two SUN factors by giving the two adjoint scalars a common vacuum expectation value. The second remark which I like to make is that indeed, again, like the 0B, which was constructed as a space-time orbit fault from 2B, you can do precisely the same thing here. You can take your n equals 4 gauge theory and apply the same projection, and you will see that the non-supersymmetric gauge theory can be constructed by this kind of space-time orbit fault from the supersymmetric one, essentially along the lines of the paper by Nekrasov and Chatashvili. Since of the conformal invariants, at least at large n, one might expect that there are same correlation functions as in the n equals 4 theory. And one issue which I also like to address later, one can expect, at least for large n, S duality in these models.
When you see it in the flat direction, in the tree level.
Yes, yes, in the tree level. I think these are all tree level statements, yes. So let us now generalize this in the following way, namely, instead of having a flat transversal space, transversal to the D3-brains, I like to replace it by a non-compact curved space with a certain type of singularity. And to begin with, you can study, for example, singularities. You divide the six-dimensional transversal space by a discrete group gamma. Then you can go on and use essentially the same techniques which people used before, for example, Douglas and Moore, and compute all these nice quiver diagrams and twisted tadpole conditions for these theories and work out the spectrum. And again, it shows out, and therefore I think it is useful to state this, that the spectrum can be again then just simply found by applying this fermion number projection on the corresponding spectrum of the type 2b theory on the same type of transversal singularity, which makes the analysis rather simple, in particular for those cases where you don't have an orbifold, where you cannot compute the spectrum, where you have use more guesswork. But just to show you this, I discussed briefly the very simplest example, namely a four-dimensional orbifold, C2 over dk, which is known to be the so-called ALE manifold with ak minus 1 singularity. In the type 2b case, this would give you an n equals 2 supersymmetric gauge theory. Now with k factors of the SUN gauge group, and this type of hypermultiplets in bifundamental representations, if you perform this fermion number projection, clearly the gauge group again gets doubled, so you get SUN times SUN, k factors of this, you get certain scalars in a joint in bifundamental representations, you get certain fermions. I don't want to go into details here, but again you will discover that the one loop beta function is zero and the two loop beta function gets 1 over n direct corrections, like in the previous n equals 2 model. You can also do the t-dual. If you go, say, to 0a now, Hanani-Witten picture, namely t-dualizing in the sense that the singularities which you are considering, say, orbifold or conifold singularity, I didn't discuss, are t-dual to certain configurations of Nivel-Schwarz five brains. You can also write down the metrics, at least for the Nivel-Schwarz brains in this context, if you assume that the tachyon mass is shifted up by the mechanism we have discussed. So you have the same kind of picture, that the non-compact singularity is t-dual to Nivel-Schwarz five brains. For example, you can study what we once called Nivel-Schwarz five brain diamonds in the supersymmetric context. And okay, just the simplest example, we start with n d3 d3 prime brains on a ZK orbifold singularity. After t duality, the ZK orbifold becomes k parallel Nivel-Schwarz five brains, and if you plug in the d4 prime brain system, the d3 brains become of course now d4 brains. If you apply the famous Hanani-Witten brain rules, you get this spectrum, the same one as before, with the same type observations. Of course, you can generalize it if you wish, starting with fractional brains on the 0b side, which then get t-dualized into a system where you have different number of d4 prime brains between the Nivel-Schwarz five brains. So this breaks, these are of course not conformal models anymore. So you get here general non-supersymmetric Hanani-Witten models with non-vanishing one-loop beta function from the beginning. But again, the nice thing which you can check, this I think is a one-loop statement here, the beta function is the same as in the type 2 parent model, which means that the bending of the Nivel-Schwarz brains should be also the same than in the supersymmetric model. Gauge anomalies. The models which come out by this fermion number projection are, I think, automatically anomaly free, if you do it right. They are chiral, yes. Wait a moment. Maybe it is trivial in the sense, indeed, that all the models are non-chiral, non-chiral indeed. So I think in my head I don't have any chiral model which I could give you as an example. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think I like prefer to answer this after the talk to see. That's a good question. So for this model, which is a pure n equals 2 gauge theory in on 2B, you get this kind of spectrum in or in 2A, excuse me, you get this kind of spectrum in 0A. So this non-supersymmetric gauge theory is not pure gauge now. It is, has scalars and fermions. It has a Coulomb branch in the adjoint direction. But again, the one loop beta function is, so to say, n equals 2-like. It is again given by the same number as in the underlying n equals 2 model, namely 2n. So you can also start to, for example, just to give you an idea of what you can do, you can start to rotate one of the two Nibel-Schwarz branes in this particular way, having NC D4, D4 prime brain suspended between the two different Nibel-Schwarz brains, and for example also NF D4, D4 prime brains, which go from one brain to infinity, if it's a non-compact model. Then the gauge theory, the non-supersymmetric gauge theory, is SUNC times SUNC, with NF massless fermions in this non-chiral representation. But the nice point again is, well, I mean, I don't know whether it's nice or not, but it's at least correct. The one loop beta function is again given by the same number than in the n equals 1 model. You know this beta function probably very well, 3nc minus nf. And moreover, this might be more interesting than this simple observation. This non-supersymmetric model exhibits, at least at large nc, again a Seiberg type of duality, just like in the n equals 1 supersymmetric parent model. Namely, you can start to move one Nibel-Schwarz brain around the other. You do the same kind of duality moves like in the n equals 1 model, which was done by Kutazov, Rabinovici, Gibeon, I guess. I hope I didn't forget anybody. So you get a dual non-supersymmetric ellipso. Sorry. So you get a dual gauge theory, this dual number of colors given by NF minus NC, and the same number of flavors. And it happened to be, we realized this later on, this non-supersymmetric gauge theory was already discussed in the literature, just from the field theory point of view, not from the brain theory point of view, by Schmalz. And he essentially draws at the end the same conclusion that there must be an Seiberg type of duality in this particular non-supersymmetric model.
What is the evidence for this?
You argue in the same way because you have, so to say, BPS stable objects. You argue in the same, precisely the same way as we or as these people did in the supersymmetric context. Well, the argument is based that these self-dual brains are stable. You can move them. They have essentially the same modelized space. So you can do everything what you are used to do in the supersymmetric case, at least in the large n limit. Because as we discussed, if you do string corrections, you get deviations from conformal symmetry. Your background looks different. And then I think all this is not anymore true. So these are essentially large n statements. Be careful, the Tuff-Kupplung has to be intermediate range in order that the ADS CFT correspondence holds according to Klebanov and Zeidlin. So it is a subtle range probably. I mean, of course this is not fully understood, but it's probably a subtle range probably in the space of Tuff coupling and the number of colors, where this has a chance to be true.
For example, you showed up there was a Coulomb branch.
Yeah. No, I don't believe so. I mean, this makes the series so special that the TUF coupling doesn't remove the flat directions. Only the 1 over n corrections lift the flat directions. Mm-hmm. So just as a short intermediate resume, then I go on. I think I can have another 10 minutes or so. Go back to the simplest case. We have n D3 brains in 2B, which gives an n equals 4 UN, and by some, maybe not some unknown reasons, I consider from now on UN instead of SUN. So D3 brains in 2B gives you an n equals 4 UN supersymmetric Young-Mills theory. This is known field content, and S duality is well established in this context. On the other hand, n self-dual D3 prime brains in 0B gives you this type of UN times UN non-supersymmetric gauge theory. This is field context. So I like to pose two questions here and try to answer them, probably not completely satisfactory. And the first question, obviously, can we say more about S-duality also for this non-supersymmetric gauge theories, or if you wish also, can we say if we reduce the starting amount of supersymmetry, can we say more about the Seebeck duality and so on. And the other question I'd like to ask, which is based on the following observation. Suppose you break the gauge group UN times UN to the diagonal. Then this diagonal is nothing else than the n equals 4 gauge theory with precisely the n equals 4 meta content. So in other words, can there be a dynamical mechanism such that the non-supersymmetric gauge theory is broken to its diagonal? In this case, one would speculate that the electric and magnetic brains would really build firm bound states such that all non-supersymmetric open string fluctuations are frozen and are not anymore allowed. So these two questions essentially bring me to the last section, namely continuous gauge and supersymmetry breaking. Namely, what I would like now to discuss is a method in which you can continuously interpolate between type 2 and type 0 string theories. In other words, you break supersymmetry or continuously interpolate between supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric string vacua. Continuous in the sense that we do not address at the moment dynamical issue what kind of potential we get in which direction we are eventually driven by by quantum effects. This is a different issue, but so let us study these models, these supersymmetry breaking models, and perhaps get a better understanding, for example, these non-supersymmetric S-duality symmetries. The way how this is done is known the old days of string theory, namely. It was done, I think, first studied by Rohm in the 80s, by Artig and Witten in the context of having strings with non-zero temperature, and then also later on by these people. Namely, you study a compactification of the type 2b or type 2a string. You go to 9 dimensions on a circle, but not really on a real circle. Namely, a circle which is divided by a Z2 symmetry, but it's not an orbifold really, it's more or less what people call a freely acting orbifold. Namely, you divide it first by a good old fermion number projection, which acts on the fermions and the bosons in the usual way, but you marry this fermion number projection with a so-called half shift on the circle T, the x9 goes to x9 plus pi times the radius circle, which we call R9 here, assuming that it's in the ninth direction. So doing this, you can now work out the spectrum, which is not so difficult. Let's see how the various momentum and winding numbers behave under this projection. Then we get first the spectrum, which is, so to say, common both to type 2 and type 0, maybe Schwarz plus, and Ramon plus and Ramon plus. And here we see that we have both momentum and winding states where both the zero momentum and zero winding number is included in the spectrum. So this is invariant under this combined symmetry. Next, we have the states which make up the type 2 string. And here we see that we have only momentum states, but so the mass goes with 1 over R9 square, but the particular thing is that the momentum number is odd, so that zero momentum is not included. On the other hand, if you look at these states which make up the type 0 string, the second Ramon sector and the Neve-Schwarz ground state, you see that these are given by winding states, but again with odd winding numbers, so that the zero winding sector is not included. So this means the following: if you consider now the two possible decompactification limits, for large radii, we recover only the type 2b spectrum, the type 2b stream, because in this limit, these states get light, get massless, whereas in the zero radius limit, only these states can get light, so you recover in this limit the 0a string theory. So in this way, we interpolate between the supersymmetric and the non-supersymmetric vacuum, and we can generalize this slightly and also extend this again in the following diagram. So instead of having just one circle, you consider two circles, one circle which breaks supersymmetry, in this way it's an orbit circle with radius R9, another usual circle with radius R8, and say, if we start with the 2B theory and first vary the, if I call it the supersymmetric circle, you just switch between, you have the usual T-duality between 2B and 2A, you switch between 2B and 2A. On the other hand, if you tune the radius of the supersymmetry breaking circle, you go from 2B to 0A, of course you can continue to go also to 0B, so via two variations, you can also continuously connect the 2B and the 0B theory, and of course also the 2A and 0A model. So this is at least true in perturbation theory. As I said, I don't discuss quantum correction to this picture, which will change it. Probably then the supersymmetry breaking circle is of course not anymore a modulus, because it will acquire potential energy, potential will run in some certain, drive the radius in some certain direction. So what I now like to do is, I again want to put the D-brains into this picture. Can I have 5 more minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Good, thank you.
I don't know.
Okay.
You know, actually,
cookies only 15 minutes. I think I'm ready. I'm done in 15 minutes. Unless some. Okay, so I want first to study the case where the D-brains, I start with the type 2 theory, and I first want to study the case where the D-brains are transversal to the supersymmetry breaking circle. For example, just to be specific, I consider 2n D3 brains of 2b. But here's a little caveat. I have to ask myself, what are the positions of the D-brains with respect to this supersymmetry breaking circle? And since I have this half shift, I have to do it in such a way which is symmetric under T, which means I put n of the D3 brains at the origin, x9, xa, x0, and n, so to say, on the middle of the circle at the position B, which is just given by R9 divided by 2. Then again, like for the closed string, we get also now two different type of open string string spectra, namely first open strings, we call them AA and BB strings, which stretch only between D brains which are positioned here or D brains which are positioned here. These have masses n times r9 square, where n is, so to say, a kind of winding number, or how often they stretch around the circle. But a different sector now is also given by AB and BA strings, namely open strings which stretch between D brains positioned here and D brains positioned here. So their masses are given by this formula, and again you see that here the winding sector in the open string doesn't include the zero winding number, which is of course the important thing to realize. So if you now continue and really sit down and do your calculation, if you're computing the Arnold's diagram to get really the spectrum out of it, you see that there are, again, if you wish, three interesting cases, namely the generic case where R9 is finite. And then you will see that only the AA and BB strings are massless, and precisely those open strings give rise to a massless n equals 4 supersymmetric UN gauge theory, just like in the 2B string. Whereas, because of this mass formula, the AB and the BA sectors are always massive. So the spectrum which breaks supersymmetry, this is a non-supersymmetric part of the spectrum, is massive. So if we now send R9 to infinity, this massive states decouple, and we get the complete supersymmetric spectrum. On the other hand, if we send R9 to zero, this is the only chance that these states can become massless, and they do, in fact. So they destroy supersymmetry, and the gauge group is now, the gauge group on the brains is now UN times UN, non-supersymmetric, the gauge group of N D4 brains in 0A, and it is precise, you know, analyze the spectrum, you see precisely that this UN is less than the diagonal subgroup of UN times UN. So the massive states are precisely those which live in the coset of this two groups. So again, show you this in this transparency, makes it perhaps a little bit clearer. We again generalize in the sense that we now look at consider two-dimensional compactification. If you wish, you start with 2B, with N D brains, and have UN n equals 4 supersymmetric gauge theory. You can go in this direction, you get 0A with UN times UN. You can do the usual T-duality. So you change the dimension of the brains, you get UN gauge theory in one dimension higher, and finally you can also go to the right lower corner where you again break supersymmetry, getting 0B, again with brains of one dimension higher, but now the gauge group is UN times UN. So if you look, for example, at the diagonal, you can of course also start here and go here. So in this way, for example, you can interpolate between gauge theories of the same dimensionality, particular four-dimensional n equals 4 UN super Young Mills can be broken to UN times UN non-supersymmetric Young Mills with this kind of spectrum. Of course, you can do also, you can investigate also the case, just will briefly mention it, where the D brains are not transverse to the supersymmetry breaking circle, but wrap around it. Then you get two type of momentum modes in the open string sector. And the only new thing is here, I will not discuss it very much further, that now you interpolate between a supersymmetric gauge theory with gauge group U2N, and again, the same non-supersymmetric gauge group is UN times UN. So in this case, the gauge group gets smaller when you break supersymmetry. In the other case, so to say, in this winding picture, the gauge group was even enhanced compared to the supersymmetric case. Okay, so finally discuss the MCU embedding of all this. So to do it, remember, probably everybody remembers, that the 2A string can be considered as MCU, whatever it is, compactified on a circle, on a simple circle, its radius R10, where the gauge coupling constant G2A is just given by 3/2 powers of this radius. So knowing this, Bergmann and Gabardiel conjectured, and I think it is a nice conjecture, that the 0A string now is given as MCOE, not compactified on a normal circle, but compactified on this funny supersymmetry breaking circle. And the gauge group of 0A is again given essentially by the same has the same radius dependence, only because I reduce essentially the length of the circle by 2. There is an additional factor of 2 here, which enters this relation. So the conjecture, the statement is indeed, if R10 is 0, you get the non-supersymmetric 0A string, a decoupling, whereas when R10 is big, is large, you get the supersymmetric MCU. You reinstall supersymmetry with all the 32 supercharges. I think it's good that you say it. It is again a Schirk-Schwarz type of compactification of MCU now, from 11 to 10 dimensions. And if you analyze this, Bergmann and Gabardiel give, I think, good arguments with this picture seems to be the one which comes out. In analogy, you can, of course, claim that 0B is MCOE now on this type of torus. It's not a real torus, of course, anymore, because on one period or one direction of the torus, we have again this Schirk-Schwarz mechanism acting, and 0B would then be obtained in the limit where I make the volume of this torus small. And moreover, and this is, I think, one of the nice points here, the argument is that is, of course, from the M theory point of view, it does not matter whether I first compactify on the supersymmetry breaking torus, or whether I first compactify on the supersymmetric circle, or whether I first compactify on the non-supersymmetric circle. So I can exchange these, which means, in other words, that, so to say, there is an ambiguity in the definition of the 2B of the 0B gauge coupling. In other words, you expect also that the 0B string is in fact invariant under strong V coupling duality, which is nothing else than the exchange of the radius R10 and R9.
Can I just ask you one more question about that?
Yes.
So if that's what the 0A theory is, do you expect that if you allow these things to vary, that the
direction
will be compactified?
Yeah, I will mention this very briefly. Of course, this is a big issue, what really happens dynamically. You can, of course, simply state that if you make the coupling larger, the closed string fermions become massless at the end, maybe as bound states, and again, as you make the coupling larger, the tachyon becomes more and more massive. So now we again put membranes into this picture. So first, 2N membranes and 2 brains, which are transversal to the two-dimensional torus. In particular, we would like again consider the type 2B limit, where I make this particular combination of radii small, so the RB radius large. Then we can study again the two limits, the non-supersymmetric limit first, where I make both radii small. Then again, we get the 0B string, now with N dual D3, D3 prime brains, giving rise to a non-supersymmetric gauge theory. It's always the same gauge theory which lives on these brains. And since the type 0B string was S-dual, or we argued at least that it's S-dual, of course this S-duality is again also now inherited by the underlying string theory. So we expect also an S-duality in the Young-Mills gauge coupling constant for this gauge theory constructed in this way. of course, we are also interested what happens in the other limit, namely in the limit where supersymmetry gets reinstalled. So this limit is obtained where we make R10 big. We might expect that we get back the supersymmetric n equals 4 gauge theory. But here, the picture is not quite as nice. Namely, if you analyze the situation more carefully, you will see that you get indeed something which is like the n equals 4 UN Supers-Young-Mills theory. However, not quite. You get essentially the M version out of this. And what one means with the M version is that the modes which you get, the light modes, are not only the gauged degrees of modes and the gauge modes, but also many other dirty things. In particular, you can show that in this particular limit we take here, the tension of the D1 strings gets small, so we not only get the gauge serial modes, but all these stringy D1 string modes do not decouple and spoil this picture essentially, such that one cannot really claim that in this limit you get just the plain, pure n equals 4 Super-Young-Mills theory. But I think this is also usual. If you take a gauge theory, embed it into M theory, and take the M theory limit, essentially you always get this so-called M theory version of the gauge theory. So finally, you can also, instead of membranes, you can use 5 brains. Just to flash this transparency, you get the same type of statements. The only thing is that now the supersymmetric phase, the gauge symmetry is U2N and not UN, but again the M version out of it, namely here you can show that the fundamental string modes do not decouple. So this is essentially the end, so let me summarize. In the first part I have discussed that one can build type 0 orientifolds which are non-tachyonic and possibly provide consistent non-supersymmetric string vacua in 10, 6, and 4 dimensions, which might be useful for model building. Then we studied D-brains in type 0 strings and obtained many non-supersymmetric gauge theories, putting these D-brains on singularities or constructing brain models with Neuro-Schwarz 5 brains. And all these models exhibit interesting dynamics, essentially inherited from the supersymmetric Anchester models. And finally, I discussed continuous interpolation between type 2 and type 0 models. And of course, here the real problem is to see how the vacuum energy depends on the radius which breaks supersymmetry, or in the M theory context, depends on the coupling constant, to discuss the stability problems of these models. And finally, to decide whether perhaps, and this would make probably the supersymmetry lovers happy, to decide whether they all fly back, which is likely, to the supersymmetric phase. Thank you.